Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Immigration and Deportation Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On January 18, 2012, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Holder v. Gutierrez, Holder v. Sawyers, as well as Vartelos v. Holder. Non-citizens may be able to avoid deportation if they have lived in the United States for at least 7 years and have been lawful permanent residents for at least 5 years. The central issue in Holder v. Gutierrez and Holder v. Sawyers is whether a non-citizen who cannot himself meet these requirements can nevertheless avoid deportation if, while still a minor, he lived with a parent who can meet these requirements. The issue in Vartelos v. Holder is whether a statute providing for the denial of reentry to a lawful permanent resident who travels abroad after having been convicted of certain offenses can be applied retroactively to a legal permanent resident who was convicted prior to the passage of the statute. To discuss these cases, we have Michael Scaperlanda, who is a professor at the University of Oklahoma College of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Scaperlanda.
We're here today to talk about three Supreme Court cases, two were consolidated, that were recently argued in both cases dealing with immigration. The first case, Holder versus Gutierrez, and its consolidated case, Holder versus Sawyer, deal with the issue of whether length of residency of the parents can be imputed to the child. And I'll go into that in a little bit more detail in a second, but I wanted to introduce the other case, and that is Vartelos versus Holder. And the issue there is whether somebody who is inadmissible, he's a permanent resident alien, is inadmissible, can leave the country and come back. The second case is Vartelos versus Holder, and it deals with the question of when somebody has made an admission into the country. And the facts of the case deal with an individual who is a permanent resident in the United States, had committed a crime in the United States, was not deportable for that crime, but if he left the country and came back and was making a new admission, he'd be found inadmissible. I'll go into that in a little bit more detail in a second. But going back to the first two cases, Holder versus Gutierrez and Holder versus Sawyer, the immigration law has broad grounds for finding somebody deportable from the United States. He can be deportable for all sorts of reasons. We also have a forgiveness statute called cancellation of removal. So somebody who is deportable but has been here a long time, 5 years as a permanent resident and 7 years in any legal status, can seek discretionary relief from the immigration authorities to have their removal from the United States canceled. And the question in Holder versus Gutierrez and Holder versus Sawyers is whether somebody who themselves does not qualify either because they've not been a permanent resident for 5 years or they haven't resided in the United States continuously for 7 years after being lawfully admitted in any status. The individual has not satisfied that, but their parents have satisfied that. So the question is whether the parent's residency can be or should be imputed to the child. The Ninth Circuit said that the status could and should be imputed to the child. The Board of Immigration Appeals disagreed with that. So this case involves statutory interpretation, whether the statute's ambiguous, and also whether the Board of Immigration Appeals has the authority to interpret the statute. So there's some Chevron deference questions here, too. The government, the petitioners in this case, argue that imputation should not take place, as the BIA said, both because the statute is unambiguous and does not allow for imputation. And second, even if the statute's ambiguous, the Board of Immigration Appeals interpreted it as not allowing imputation, and therefore the courts ought to give deference to the Board of Immigration Appeals. The question on imputation really comes up because of a background predecessor statute to the cancellation of removal statute, the current one. The old law, 212C, allowed permanent residents who had had a certain number of years of domicile to seek relief from deportation or removal from the country. And there were three courts of appeals who said that the domicile of the parent, could be imputed to the child. In 1996, Congress changed the statute, deleted 212C, and implemented the new cancellation of removal statute. The new statute does not use the word domicile. It uses the word residing and permanent residence. So the government's argument is that the imputation under the old statute, the domicile statute, is no longer effective because of the change in statutory language. That is that under the old statute, domicile looked to the intent of the person having domicile, whether they intended to be domiciled in a particular location, and that it makes sense that the parent's intent be imputed to them since the child has no ability to determine where they live. The new statute, in contrast, the government argues, rests upon the status of the alien, not the intent of the alien. So legal permanent residence especially is a legal status. And the government also argued that residency is a status and not an intent. And so the government grants status regardless of somebody's intent. And so therefore, imputation would be improper in these cases. The respondents in this case, for Gutierrez and Sawyers, both argue that the imputation under the old 212C, the old statute, ought to carry forward and be applied to the new statute, basically for policy reasons. And that is that one of the policies of our immigration law is to keep families together. And since the child doesn't have a choice on where they live, it makes sense that to the respondents that imputation take place. The respondents don't see the relevancy of the change in statutory language, and they have some arguments where they try to pull other cases where status was imputed and not just intent. Now, the respondents, I think, make a crucial concession, and they say in order for the alien child to be eligible for cancellation of removal, and they make this in the oral argument, in order for the child to be eligible for cancellation of removal, the child must be a permanent resident alien. The government must have granted that status of permanent resident alien, just maybe not for the 5 years required under the statute. So in my mind anyway, the concession that status cannot be imputed, but just time in the status can be imputed, I think is a crucial concession that might turn the case against the respondent. The respondents also argue that the statute might be ambiguous and that the Board of Immigration Appeals is not entitled to deference because the Board of Immigration Appeals thought the statute was clear and didn't give any policy reasons for it, its conclusion that the statute did not allow imputation. The government contests that and says the Board of Immigration Appeals says that the statute's unambiguous but also gives policy reasons why the statute ought to not allow imputation. So in the end, Holder versus Gutierrez and Holder versus Sawyer was a case of statutory interpretation and whether Chevron deference ought to be applied in the case. If I had to hazard a guess, I would guess that probably the government would win in this case, either because the statute is clear, as different from the old statute, that this statute deals with status and not intent, whereas the old statute where imputation was allowed dealt with intent and not status. Or that the statute is ambiguous and the Board of Immigration Appeals is entitled to Chevron deference. The other case, Vartelis versus Holder, deals with a person who was a permanent resident alien in the United States. In the early 1990s, he had a part in a counterfeiting scheme, pled guilty, and was sentenced to 4 months in jail. This crime did not make him deportable. If he had committed the crime before he came in the United States, he would be inadmissible because we have different categories of inadmissibility and deportability, and so he would have been ineligible, inadmissible to come into the United States. But the crime did not make him deportable. He went to visit his aging parents in Greece, and upon an attempt to reenter the country, he was found inadmissible because of this crime that he had committed. And clearly within the statute that's in place now, and the statute was adopted after his criminal activity, under the statute as it reads now, a person who is in the United States, commits a crime in the United States, goes abroad, comes back, the crime that they committed before they left can be used to find them inadmissible. Prior to the adoption of the statute, somebody who had committed a crime in the United States, pled guilty, was not deportable but was inadmissible, left the country and came back after a brief, casual, and innocent trip abroad, would be treated as not making a new entry into the United States, so they would not be found inadmissible. It was this change of law that would make him inadmissible. So the question in Vartelis is whether the new statute, which would make this person inadmissible, should apply, or whether the old statute, which would allow this person to make a brief, casual, and innocent trip abroad, should apply, which would allow him to reenter the country and only be subject to the grounds for deportability and not inadmissibility. Two key questions that came up in both both in the briefs and at oral argument. One was, is this a retroactive statute? And second, even if it is a retroactive statute, the government's argument in this case rests upon two different alternative grounds in arguing that the new statute, 101A13C, should apply to this alien and this alien's attempted reentry into the United States. The government's first argument is that the prior event, the event which triggered the inadmissibility, was the crime and not the conviction. And this was important because several years ago, the court in St. Cyr, Saint and then C-Y-E-R, had held that the revocation of 212C relief, this old cancellation of removal relief, could not be applied to somebody who'd pled guilty before 212C. The focus on the crime rather than the guilty plea was important to the government's case because in a case decided several years ago, the St. Cyr case, the court said without a clear statement from the repeal of 212C, the old cancellation of removal statute that we talked about earlier, would not have been retroactive as somebody who had pled guilty prior to the repeal of 212C because that person, when they pled guilty, had settled expectation that they could seek relief under 212C. 212C depended upon a conviction. The key element in 212C was a conviction of a crime and seeking relief from deportation because of the conviction of a crime. Whereas the statute at issue in the Vartelis case deals with a commission of a crime and not the conviction. So a person who's committed a crime and goes abroad versus convicted of a crime. And since individuals do not have settled expectations to commit crimes, by focusing on the crime and not the guilty plea, the government was arguing that there was no reliance on the ability to travel abroad and come home when the person pled guilty because the relevant key event was the crime and not the conviction. The other argument is that this was not retroactive at all, that the triggering event here was future conduct, the conduct of seeking reentry into the country, and so therefore there was no retroactive application of the statute at all. The alien in this case argued that by applying 101A13C retroactive to encompass the guilty plea that was entered prior to the adoption of 101A13C imposed a disability on the individual's future conduct. They would no longer be able to leave the country and come back without being subject to the grounds for inadmissibility. And therefore, even though Congress had power to create the statute to effectuate that result under Supreme Court precedent, it needed a clear statement. There was no clear statement that Congress intended 101A13C to apply to conduct, to conviction that had occurred prior to the adoption of 101A13C. Again, my guess, if I had to hazard a guess, I think the government will win this case. Another case of statutory interpretation, but again, those guesses are dangerous.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.